The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
It is a pleasure to introduce our next instructor based in Burlingame, California. Sean Stannard Stockton is the President and Chief Investment Officer of Ensemble Capital Management and Portfolio Manager of the Ensemble Fund. In addition to advising the fund, Ensemble Capital manages 700 plus million in separate accounts on behalf of families and charitable institutions. Prior to Ensemble, Sean worked at Scudder Investments. He holds a BA in economics from the University of California at Davis. As many of you in the MY Global community will know and appreciate, Sean has shared his wisdom and insights with us in the past, and we are truly grateful he has chosen this opportunity to be with us again. Also, I'll mention that Sean has been an instructor at the Latticework Summit in New York, and it was a great pleasure to learn from him there as well. So on behalf of the MY Global community, a very warm welcome back to you, Sean. Please go ahead.
Thanks so much, John. So to be back, these are great presentations. I really enjoy watching all the other presenters as well. And today we're going to be talking about Sensata Technologies. It's an auto supplier that we've followed since 2011, owned it at different points during that time. And one of the interesting things about suppliers in general is that sometimes, but not always, they have stronger competitive positioning than the OEMs that they sell to, but sometimes not. And so I think that sometimes people will focus more on kind of industry dynamics and say, well, these are suppliers, they don't have the same sort of positioning as somebody else. And we think it's important to kind of slice and dice those. So we've never owned another auto supplier besides Sensata, and don't have a strong position about them. But I think that we think Sensata is kind of a differentiated competitive positioning compared to many other players in the industry. So first, just a quick overview of Ensemble, so you have some context. So we're a San Francisco Bay Area-based asset manager, about $820 million in AUM, about 610 of that in our equity strategy. It's our only in-house equity strategy. Firm was founded in 97. I'm the president and CIO today. I joined in 2002 as the second employee when we had about 65 million, grown it since then. And so, you know, the attributes of our strategy that are relevant to understanding why we find Sensata attractive is that our focus is on finding competitively advantaged business models. So we're not value investors in the sense that we advertise ourselves that way. We aren't growth investors. Certainly, we pay enormous attention to the value of any stock that we buy. Our whole process is around identifying the private market value of a business based on its cash flows and then comparing that to market trading values. And a lot of our businesses grow at above nominal GDP rates, even some very fast-growing companies. But we're market cap agnostic. We mostly are in the mid to large space, although we regularly hold a number of kind of single-digit billion positions in the market cap positions in the strategy. We have a focused portfolio, so 15 to 30 holdings, kind of 1 to 10% weights, and typically have a 3 to 5 year holding period. Active shares runs around 90% or so, and 100% of my personal public equity assets are in the strategy. So when thinking about Sensata, you know, it's really thinking about supplying the sensors needed to build the car of the future. So the business was a division at Texas Instruments, quite some time ago, over a decade ago, that was taken private by Bain and then later taken public as Sensata Technologies. And I think the thing to think about with the business is that the key secular growth driver is the increase in sensor content per vehicle. So auto production, that end market, is clearly a cyclical industry and not one that we think is going to grow all that much, even over the longer term. And so the driver of the investment, the reinvestment opportunity for the business is about serving an increased need for sensor content per vehicle. I think, having followed the stock for a long time, that one of the best ways to kind of trade the stock, and I mean that in over a longer term time frame, is that when there are cyclical production concerns, it's a good time to buy the stock. And when people are overly optimistic about the production cycle, it's a good time to sell the stock because that's basically a low growth, long-term driver. And it's really about the content. So what is a sensor? Some examples here from Sensata, kind of their key areas is safety. So tire pressure sensors, really important. Those are mandated in the US, mandated in Europe. You know, if your tire blows out on the freeway, people die. I mean, this is a very important sensor. Tire pressure sensing also complicated because it needs to be inside the wheel, which is actually rotating very quickly. And so it needs to communicate wirelessly with the rest of the car. And China is only now implementing tire pressure sensor mandates. And so Sensata is one of the leading providers there, and we think that's part of the growth driving. Occupant seat detection. So, you know, a modern car will know whether or not there is an adult or a child or no occupant sitting in the passenger seat and deploy or not deploy the airbag is necessary. Emissions control, very important. So examples would be an eight-cylinder car that deactivates two cylinders once it hits cruising speed on the freeway to reduce emissions and improve fuel efficiency and particulate filters. So obviously, kind of post the emission scandals in Europe around diesel, this has been an important issue for them. Now, one kind of, we think it's a minor thing in the grand scheme of things, but just to be aware that diesel cars use more Sensata sensors than gas-powered cars. I'll go in depth a little bit later around the different types of cars and their sensor content, but the shift away from diesel in Europe towards gas-powered cars is a near-term drag on Sensata's sensor content per vehicle, so you need to be thinking about that. On the flip side, there's obviously much more focus on emissions control across all car types in Europe, and that's a positive for Sensata. And then just the basic smart car technologies. And so Sensata is not focused on kind of infotainment type of sensors, although that's mostly a commodity sorts of business. Their sensors are much more focused on things that drive the car that are very kind of mission critical and also are often operating under very harsh conditions like inside of an internal combustion engine, although they also have a lot of content in electric vehicles and hybrid vehicles, which I'll talk about. But within those kind of that smart category, you have kind of cabin comfort sensors, rain and light sensors, or, you know, a modern Mercedes or BMW as you approach a curve will recognize that you're turning and rotate the headlights as an angle to kind of better illuminate where you're driving. So all those sorts of things are driven by these sorts of sensors. The key thing to know is that these sensors are really cheap. Most of them are a couple dollars each. But if they fail, cars crash and people die. And kind of less dramatically, a failed sensor can cost thousands of dollars of repairs because you have to pull out or replace an entire engine system that's dependent on that sensor. So despite the fact that these are really pretty cheap, they're mission critical products that make a very small percent of the cost of the overall car, which means that the automakers have no incentive to cut costs on the sensors. They just want sensors that work. Because if you cut the cost of your sensor portfolio in a car in half, it would be completely immaterial to the cost of the car. So let's talk about production cycle a bit because the stock's down a lot and this is why it's down. So within the US, this is we're looking at 30-year history of auto sales. And when we think about auto sales in the US is that we basically think that they are at kind of normalized levels. You see the big decline from the recession and the recovery. This is not kind of a secular growth. Yes, of course, population is still growing. You also have more people using other forms of transportation. And, you know, you have fewer people who have three cars. They have two cars. They have one car. And so there's really been no growth in car sales over the last 20 years. And I think that's the way to think about the U.S. production market is, of course, it's going to move up and down, but it's not a growth driver over a multi-year sort of time frame. There's been worries about it declining some. This is production till just recently. Of course, there can be cyclical pullbacks, but we don't think there's any reason to believe that it is well above kind of a normalized trend. If it was, then you would be worried that a decline might be a decline to a lower level that becomes permanent. And our view is that any declines from these levels are going to see subsequent recovery, which is what we saw after the last recession. This is European auto sales. So one thing, just to flip back on US, you'll see these were annualized monthly numbers. It's a much smoother chart. Bloomberg doesn't report those in the same way. So the Europe numbers and the China, I'll show you in a bit, are actually monthly, and it's a seasonal business, so it fluctuates. But the pink line there, I've put in the 12-month rolling average. And so, you know, you have a bit of growth here. It's been about 1% annually over the last 20 years, kind of similar to population growth. But again, this is in kind of a no-growth production market over the very long term. Now, there will be mix shift in the types of cars, and we'll get to the sensor content per car, because mix shift does matter a lot for Sensata. But again, we don't see any reason to think that the level of auto sales in Europe are extremely extended and need to reset to lower levels. Instead, you know, any sort of kind of material decline would likely be offset through a cyclical recovery. And then here's China. So totally different sort of business, right? This is the growth engine of the global car sales. It's a bigger market than the US. More cars are sold in China than in the US. Yet auto sales per capita in China are less than half the level of developed markets. So that's why it's still growing, right? You need more cars, the number of people that live there as the country industrializes and modernizes. So growth has been about 5% per year annually, but it's really volatile. This is just monthly numbers, so some of that's just the seasonality, but even thinking about any sorts of smooth numbers, you still have more volatility. So over the past 5 years, growth has averaged about 5%, similar to the kind of the longer term growth rate. But in 25% of all of those months, so the 60 months in the past 5 years, in a quarter of those months, you've seen year-over-year declines. So setting aside the recent, more persistent weakness in China, you just need to be aware that even in the context of a growing auto market, the Chinese auto sales frequently print negative year-over-year numbers, which can look scary in case you've kind of followed it longer. More recently, of course, it started to decline more persistently. So the Chinese auto sales went in decline last summer in July. You saw sales were down, and it has declined every month since, and it's kind of finished out for down about 6% for 2018, which is the first decline in Chinese auto sales in about 25 years. So some of this in the second half has to do with very strong sales in the second half of 2017. So some of it's just kind of a lapping issue. You can kind of see that on the chart here just by looking at the end of 2017. But there's a very real possibility 2019 could be down again. So, you know, we're not Chinese economic experts, but we have a number of companies in different industries that have exposure to China. And we definitely believe that the Chinese economy has slowed quite a lot. And while it may still be growing, it may be effectively kind of recessionary conditions. So we would not discount the potential for car sales in China to decline in 2019. We would note that just this morning, GM issued guidance for 2019 and forecasted flat sales in China as well as in the US. Sensata themselves said in October, the end of October, that that they saw no reason to believe that car sales in China would decline materially in the year or two ahead. They did not set aside the possibility it could be down 3 or 4 or 5%. What they were saying was that there's no reason to see a big correction or collapse. And so similarly to my comments on the US and Europe, because auto sales per capita are going to keep growing and China is going to keep growing, we definitely think that any kind of declines in Chinese auto sales will be offset by cyclical rebounds. And looking at this chart and just our own analytics, we don't see any real reason to think that things are really extended there. And of course, the right time to buy into a cyclical trend is when it's down, right? And so the real question is whether or not trends are, you know, inflated above long-term levels, which we don't think they are. But this is the key risk to owning Sensata. This is why the stock's down as much as it is. The market is worried that global auto production, in China in particular, will see contracting auto production, which would be contracting purchases of sensors. And of course, Sensata can offset some of that through growth in content per vehicle, but not completely. So this is global auto sales. So if you assume the developed market sees no growth in auto sales and China grows, say, 3% rather than the 5% they have historically, you get about 1% annual global production growth. So of course, there's other markets besides the US, Europe, and China, but those are the key drivers. So that is the large majority of global auto sales. And so notice the pink line, not the red arrow line, but the pink line, which is the 12-month moving average. Notice that it's rolling over. But again, looking at this chart, there's very little reason to think that you're in some sort of, you know, hyperextended part of the cycle that needs to contract. And so, you know, our basic viewpoint of the longer term, as we'll talk about as I look at the growth model a little bit later on, is that you basically see about 1% global growth in auto sales, which is less than we've seen historically. but we think is a very reasonable and conservative number going forward. So content per vehicle. So the average kind of mature market vehicle, so this is like a Honda Accord sort of car, is about $40 per vehicle in Sensata sensor content. And so that's the number that is the kind of relevant number that has room to expand. The average luxury car would have over $100 in sensor content per vehicle. Now, if you think about luxury cars, the features that they have tend to gravitate to more average price cars over time. So things like a occupant sensor or the headlights that I mentioned, or you know, all sorts of these things that are initially standard in luxury cars generally become standard on kind of your average car over time. And so I think that it's not that the mature market or the average car will reach the same level as luxury cars, but they will both increase over time. But the luxury car segment gives you visibility into just how much more the sensor content per car could grow in your average car, because all those features are going to get cheaper and cheaper and come into the average car over time. The average Chinese car is only $10 of Sensata content per vehicle, which has doubled over the last kind of 3 to 4 years. And Sensata expects it to grow by another 50% over the next 3 years. So if you think about the average Chinese car, a basic kind of entry-level car, in years past, it might not even have had airbags, right? Now you're starting to have kind of all of the sorts of things we're talking about. I mentioned tire pressure sensor mandate, and that's a big one. That's something that Sensata really dominates. It's a lot of content, and it's been mandated that all Chinese cars have this over the next couple of years. And then electric vehicles. So at Ensemble, we believe that electric vehicles are going to be adopted over a kind of 10 to 20 year period at a faster rate than we think the consensus believes. So we do not discount at all kind of the viability of electric vehicles. And so a couple of years ago, Sensata's sensor content per electric vehicle was much lower than for a gas vehicle, because a lot of their sensors, especially their competitively advantaged sensors, were those that operate inside the internal combustion engine under very high heat, terrible, harsh conditions. And that's what was special about those sensors and why they were so important, such as temporarily disabling a cylinder, like we talked about. And so over the last 3 to 4 years, the company has been intentionally adding electric vehicle sensor content, and then recently purchased a company called Gigavac, which has sensors that are more than just auto sensors, but their key auto customer is Tesla. And with that purchase, Sensata's sensor content per electric vehicle doubled from $20 to $40. So they are not on par with your average gas vehicle. So any shift to electric vehicles would not be a headwind. And yet the company expects that electric vehicle Sensata content per vehicle will grow more quickly than gas, and so it will quickly turn into a tailwind. So we now believe that any shift to electric vehicles would be a tailwind, no longer a headwind to Sensata. Hybrids, which have to have kind of gas engine plus all the electric stuff, are $100 plus. We don't think that's kind of the model for the future, but hybrids are another category, and that would be a very positive attribute if, in fact, hybrids became kind of a dominant or a bigger share of the overall market. So the growth model for the business, so we talked about kind of 1% plus global production growth, sensor content per vehicle across all vehicle types, about kind of 5 to 7%. Pricing is -1 to 2, which could sound like, well, they must not be competitively advantaged if they don't have pricing power. But what's actually happening here is they are signing multi-year contracts with the OEMs to supply sensors and baking in price reductions, because like most businesses, the cost of doing these things as you increase volumes goes down. So that is not pricing pressure from competition. It's just how they write their contracts, basically. One of the really interesting attributes we'll talk a little bit about later is the fact that Sensata work with all the major global automakers, and many of them they've worked for 20, 30 years plus. And Sensata engineers actually go to work every day in the automakers' facilities. And that's like where their desk is. It's not like they're coming in for a visit. They work there. And so you think he has like a Honda Civic, it's like a platform, a car platform. and the Sensata engineer is the person who designs the sensors for that car when it's being designed in collaboration with Honda. And I'm just giving Honda's example. I don't know if the Honda Civic was actually designed with Sensata or not. And then once it's designed in, that platform, such as the Honda Civic, it lasts for a long time, right? Car makers, you know, build a platform and they keep it in place. And so there is this constant reordering of sensors. They're not going out and rebidding kind of the market for new sensors. Sensata doesn't have just like a catalog. These are all custom built sensors. So it's not like, you know, 3 years into a new platform, the OEM goes out and says, hey, I want to be rebid my sensor portfolio. And remember, at like $40 per car, why would they bother? It literally wouldn't be worth their time to pick up the phone and call and solicit bids and look at them, let alone actually switch to somebody different. So pricing is kind of the negative 1-2%. This leads to revenue growth of kind of 4-6%. Now, this is the company's guidance, and we put 4-6% plus, although their guidance is 4-6%. They've brought their guidance down some in recent years. You know, production's been slowing. They had some challenges around the cyclicality of kind of heavy off-road vehicles, trucks, where you had kind of big declines in production, and now they're starting to see a big rebound in that. We would like to think that sensor content can grow more in the high single digits rather than kind of the mid to high. Not a huge differential, but if over the next 5 years this business kind of X any M&A, you know, grows at closer to 7 or 8 or maybe even 9%, if you have a shift to electric vehicles, it wouldn't be very surprising to us. But kind of our valuation and, you know, is more predicated on kind of a mid or somewhat above mid single digit revenue growth rate. And then you have this ongoing margin lift in their business, and operating income growth is around 10%. So you have a kind of a solid kind of mid single digit revenue grower with more like 10% multi-year operating income, pre-tax, pre-interest operating income growth. I'll talk about the tax impact, which is kind of interesting for Sensata later. But this is kind of what you're buying into. So when we think about businesses to invest in, as I mentioned at kind of the introduction, is we focus on businesses that are competitively advantaged before looking at valuation, before thinking about anything around growth or anything like that. We're just looking for understanding that a business is competitively advantaged. And our belief is that the market systematically underprices competitively advantaged businesses because the market systematically underappreciates the ability of those companies to prevent competition from coming in and stealing, you know, their market or their profits. And so for us, this is kind of the keystone of what we're looking for. And so if a company is not particularly competitive advantaged, we don't care how cheap it is or what its opportunities, we just pass. So for us, this is an important slide. So I talked about the engineers working for decades in the office of the automaker. So that's an unusual setup, right? You don't see too many suppliers who work in the facility of any sort of company. And so, you know, we think that it just leads to this very kind of close. Sorry about that. Something started ringing on my side and I thought it was the webcast. I'll have to ignore it. So I'm gonna back up here. Sorry about that, everybody. Okay. So I apologize if you can hear a ringing noise in the background here. So we talked about the engineers working there. The other, the kind of mission critical low cost, this is something we look for across our portfolio. So we're generalist portfolio managers. We own kind of 20 to 25 positions typically. If you look something like Paychex, a totally different business than Sensata. It's a business we own for a long time. And the cost of payroll processing is very low cost. Any business, if it went to zero, it would not show up in the earnings report for anything material. And yet, if you don't pay your employees, that's pretty mission critical. So this general attribute of mission critical business, mission critical products that are low cost, the overall structure is something that we find very attractive in a lot of businesses. Plus, the failure costs of these sensors are very, very, very high. They work with basically every major automaker. The one exception, and I'll talk more about Denso in a second, is Toyota has a captive sensor maker called Denso. And so for a long time, that was kind of the only major automaker that didn't work directly with Sensata. However, in recent years, Denso and Toyota have been turning to Sensata to have them make sensors that were too challenging for Denso to make. At a high enough quality. So that speaks to kind of the technical proficiency the company has, even though we don't think of that as an insurmountable competitive advantage, it's real because one of their few competitors has basically said, here, you make this. So threats and risks to the business. So autonomous vehicle, it's unclear to us whether or not this is a risk or an opportunity. So like with electric vehicles, we believe that autonomous vehicles are going to have a faster, higher adoption rate than we think the consensus is, although there's certainly people on Wall Street that are a lot more bullish. We have an investment in Alphabet. We have a view on the value of Waymo, their autonomous driving division. We've seen what we think are some outrageous valuations from some analysts on the street of what Waymo might get to. And some of those assumptions are extremely rapid adoption of autonomous vehicles. We don't share those. But we do think that over the kind of the next decade or two, this is a very real thing that's going to happen. And so, you know, some people might say, well, if there's autonomous vehicles, they're going to be operating all the time. You'll have a lot less cars around, right? You just won't need as many cars to move people if these cars are moving all the time. I think the average car is parked 95% of the time. An autonomous vehicle maybe, you know, have a much, much higher utilization rate. However, human drivers are a key sensor element in cars that automakers depend on. So if you're driving your car on the freeway and you start hearing a weird knocking noise in the engine, you know to pull over and figure out what's going on. There is a wide range of things like that where the human is a sensor for how the car is doing, and the automakers don't have built-in sensors for those things. So if you remove the driver, it's not just removing the navigator, it is also removing the key sensor of the car's health and what's going on with the car. And so we believe that autonomous vehicles will have dramatically more sensor content, not just in navigation, but throughout the entire car. So, you know, you kind of have this push and pull. However, even if you have fewer cars per capita through autonomous vehicles, you will not likely see a decrease in miles driven. And it's miles driven that deplete a car and require it to be replaced, which means a new car with more sensors. So even if you see fewer car sales, autonomous vehicles may be offset with higher sensor per content and much more frequent sales. So this is a kind of a mixed one that we're tracking closely. Global recession, we talked about, look, that's obviously a risk. Moving into industrial sensing. So I'm very focused on auto in this presentation, just from the scope of the presentation we can do today. It's about 75% of the business. They also do sensors that are kind of industrial sensing. So this can be things like HVAC systems, commercial HVAC systems, airplanes. We don't think it's as competitively advantaged as the auto business, but it certainly is a growth opportunity for them, and you know, an area that we think is a positive thing for them to participate in. And then debt and capital allocation. So remember, they have a private equity background. Bain took them private and then took them public. Their CEO has been with them since all of that. They very much have a private equity mindset that we like, in that they are thinking about with their M&A, what is their hurdle rate, what's the return, what's the ROI on buybacks. They are targeting a 3x EBITDA debt structure. They have a very variable cost structure, and so they're not nearly as cyclical as you might think, and we can talk about that in just a minute. But I think that you have both a very kind of informed, smart capital allocation reinvestment team, and also like private equity people generally run kind of higher debt than average. And so some investors might look at this and say they're too aggressive in their capital allocation structure, their capital structure. But we think that they're really doing a good job optimizing it. So this is kind of the valuation of the business, their forward multiples. And we believe the stock is basically priced as if a major recession or a major decline in auto sales, which typically go together, and big declines in auto sales don't typically happen on a global basis outside of a recession. So we think the stock's priced as if this is a sure thing. We think a recession could happen. We do not think that it's a sure thing. And we think the stock's priced is pretty much as if it is. One thing to know about valuation is that Sensata has a large non-cash expense in their income statement related to amortizing the stepped up asset values as required under GAAP from Bain taking them private. So I'm not going to go through all of the accounting there. Basically, when they were taken private, the cost, the value of their assets on the inventory were all stepped up. Now they're being amortized. This is a non-economic, non-cash cost. It is a tax shield. It is a positive for the business to use tax shield, and has nothing to do with the cash flow distributable to shareholders. So, you know, we're not people who generally think about pro forma everything, but this is one where this is not like, this is like a common sense economic adjustment to the income statement. And so you should exclude that. However, one thing to note is that the company only pays a tax rate of about 7% due to those tax shields. And while that's going to last for the foreseeable future, if you kind of have a terminal value multiple framework as we do, then you need to be thinking about a higher tax rate than 7%. And they're not going to trade at 7. They're not going to have 7% taxes forever. So the return potential, the business generates kind of about 40% or so returns on tangible capital. It's exactly the sort of business we like, produces an enormous amount of cash, and it's very lucrative for them to reinvest in the business. They have the kind of 3x net debt capital structure that we think is sustainable, and that's what the company is targeting. We talked about the revenue and earnings growth potential. We do think they're smart capital allocators. They do a fair bit of M&A, although we think that any kind of larger deals are mostly behind them. They systematically target kind of 20% or so IRRs on that M&A, and they've done buybacks. They don't pay a dividend, but they've done buybacks different times in the past. And then most recently, they were able to free up a bunch of cash on their balance sheet through various ways, and they kind of they moved to the UK because of some legal things that allowed them to. They moved to the UK from a tax standpoint or from a a jurisdiction standpoint that allowed them to free up more capital for buybacks, and all that led to them buying back 10% of the share count over last summer, and they've reinitiated a new buyback more recently. So we're thinking they're smart about that, and they've said, and we believe that buybacks will be a bigger portion of their cash return strategy relative to M&As. So we think terminal value on this is around 20x earnings, but watch the tax rate as we talked about. So flipping back, you can see that they reached about 20x earnings before 2015-16 was the last time you had kind of big worries about a China decline. We did a write-up about Sensata in, I believe it was kind of early 2016, talking about the opportunity. And I went back and read it recently, and we said the stock is down because of worries about the Chinese economy and a broader U.S. market sell-off, which is exactly the conditions we have today, right? So maybe, of course, this time the Chinese worries are real. We believe they're more real and more worrisome than they were in early 2016. And yet, you know, we've kind of seen this play out before. So if you think about, you know, almost doubling the multiple, let alone the earnings growth, you know, we think the next couple of years you have kind of 100% plus potential upside. So very kind of positive potential outcome from all of this, and we think the stock's priced to protect you from at the very least a mild recession. So that's about it. We got my disclosures, of course, which I'll leave up here on the screen, and then John, if you have questions, we'd love to take them.
Sean, thank you so much for the presentation, as always. Just a reminder to everyone on the line, if you do have a question, feel free to type it into the online interface. It would be interesting if you could expand a little bit more on the management and their incentives and the alignment there with shareholders, please.
Sure. It's been a little while since we did the assessment on the payment to management. I'd hate to state something that wasn't accurate. I do know that all of the companies that we invest in at the very least don't have kind of detrimental incentive structures. The business in the past has had a return on invested capital incentive metric, and I believe they still do, but like I said, I haven't looked at it in a couple of years here. And so we definitely think that management acts in a very fully aligned way, and I believe their incentives are supportive of that. They certainly have been in the past, and I have no reason to think that's changed.
What do you think are the key data points to track here to either validate or challenge your thesis over time?
So I think for our standpoint, it's really about sensor content per vehicle, right? So that is something that we had thought in the market, the company guided to being in kind of the higher single digits. During that 2015-16 kind of industrial recession, we saw heavy off-road vehicles see significant declines. You saw a significant slowdown in sensor content per vehicle. It stayed positive, never declined. But you know, we don't see why that shouldn't grow closer to the higher single digit numbers again. That's above what management's guiding for, and maybe they're being conservative. But I think this line would worry us a lot is if you, outside of you know, some sort of recessionary conditions, you saw sensor content per vehicle kind of flatlining or growing low single digits. We definitely wouldn't be as interested in this business if this was not the growth driver. The production is going to be volatile. I mean, of course, if you saw some global collapse of car sales, you know, that would be very worrisome. But we just don't see any path over a kind of 5-year plus time frame under which transportation vehicles are going to go into some major decline, with the one caveat, as I talked about, that autonomous vehicles could reduce the number of total cars in service at any given time, but they would be used up much faster, given more miles per day or month or whatever being driven. And so even that wouldn't offset the auto sales all that much.
In terms of capital allocation going forward, what would you like to see the management prioritize?
So I think share buybacks right now, I mean, given where the stock's priced, they've been buying back a lot of stock, and so they share that. They've done some larger acquisitions in the past, and we think those have been smartly done for the most part. We don't think they need to do a lot of bigger acquisitions right now, and so would generally not look to them to do that. The one area where they might do more would be in electric vehicles, but it's not like there's electric vehicle sensor companies out there that have these portfolios that they could buy to get market share. In fact, most electric vehicles are using sensors that were repurposed from non-auto you know, uses, right? So electric powered sensors, but things for electric equipment, right? Or other kind of industrial things rather than cars. And so that's like with GigaVac, only about 40% is Tesla sensors. The rest of it's kind of more industrial, electrified industrial sensors. And so they may do some acquisitions in the kind of EV space, or in the autonomous space. So they did a JV with a company called Quanergy, which has a LiDAR systems, which is kind of the LiDAR, if you don't know, is the system that autonomous vehicles use for seeing the world around them. And so deals that they did around autonomous or electric vehicles could be something that we would view favorably, but of course would depend on the terms and what the deal was.
In looking at the automotive sector broadly, are you aware of other companies or business models that are similarly attractive?
So recently there's been some worries about other sensor companies, Aphenol, TE Connectivity, and both those companies have been trying to increase the amount of sensor revenue that they generate. Generally, those sensors they're talking about are not competitive with Sensata. One thing to be aware of is that a company that sells auto systems, like an airbag system, that system they sell, the whole thing, may have sensors in it. So it's not like they're the only people in the world making sensors. And so I think as far as competition, paying attention to whether automakers started buying more complete systems, which would displace some Sensata sensors since they were being sold as part of the system, would be one thing to pay attention to. You know, we don't think that the auto industry is a particularly good industry to invest in more generally, and there's no other kind of auto suppliers we've been involved in. We've looked at a couple recently around autonomous vehicles, and even so, much of that doesn't look very competitively advantaged. It looks like maybe a great growth opportunity, but if it plays out, you're going to have a lot of other people come in there. So, you know, you think about a sensor, it's basically just a semi chip, kind of like, and it was rolled out of, you know, the Texas Instruments, like I talked about. And so it's, you know, it's sensing something and sending a signal. And the key thing is that doing that under harsh mission critical conditions is what makes it completely advantaged. Just doing it in, you know, a big computer, which is what some, you know, many things are these days, not so interesting. And so I think that the focus would be, if you identify a different company, would be what gives them kind of a competitive advantage with the OEMs they're selling to. And we haven't come across too many.
Do you think there are aspects of their technology that could be applied more broadly, perhaps even outside the automotive sector down the road?
Yeah, so the you know, we talked about industrial sensing, and the whole kind of factory floor is being electrified, and so that's part of kind of the Gigavac acquisition. You know, things like HVAC systems need to become more and more efficient, both from an emission standpoint or environmental standpoint, as well as just cost controls. So they're doing those sorts of things. Some of their sensors are sold into airplanes. So we've been longtime holders of TransDigm that sells parts to airlines. It's a hyper lucrative business, unbelievably so. And certainly Sensata could drive deeper into that business. I forget the exact numbers, but it's like an airplane has something like 1,000 times more sensors than a car does, which it makes sense given its size and complexity. So, you know, if you think about sensors and kind of Internet of Things, there's definitely a role for all of this. A lot of that might be just very commodity-based sensors, right, that we wouldn't be interested in Sensata pursuing. But there's got to be different angles as the whole world becomes more interconnected in kind of more rugged environments where Sensata probably has a opportunity to expand their addressable market.
Well, Sean, I'll leave it there. I want to just thank you very much for being with us once again and sharing your perspectives and this idea with our members.
Thank you so much. And for all those listening, I really appreciate it. And assuming you're all members of the community here, and I look forward to seeing everyone else's presentation as well. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Goodbye for now.